Welcome one, welcome all. Step right up, step right up, ladies and gentlemen. Portal Gaming Podcast. Howdy, everybody. Portal Gaming Podcast is a podcast brought to you by a store called The Portal, which is located in Manchester, Connecticut. For more information, you can go to www.theportalct.com. You can check us out on Facebook, The Portal. You can find us streaming games live on Step Into The Portal on YouTube. And you can find me on Twitter at PortalGaming60. Howdy, everybody. My name is The Brant. I am hosting this episode, episode number 184, which is going to be a recap of Dice Tower East. However, I didn't go to Dice Tower East this year, so I brought in two guests. My first guest has been on the podcast before, Eric Summer. Hello, how are you?
Hi there, Brant. How's it going?
Good. I'm full of energy and sweating in the summer heat.
Excellent. Excellent.
And my second guest here is Steph Hodge from All the Meeples in the Rainbow. And you can also find her streaming on Twitch, All the Games with Steph. And your gamer calendar. What's the name of your gamer calendar, Steph?
Steph's Awesome Gaming Calendar.
I love it. That's such a good name. Awesome. How are you? I'm so happy to have you on the podcast.
Oh my God, so happy to be here. Yay.
Awesome. So you two went to Dice Tower East, so you're going to get a chance to tell us about your experience, and then what all the people want to hear about, the games, is the fun part. So the games that got played. It's not true, right? Especially after the pandemic, I feel like seeing people at conventions is such an important part. I think more so even than beforehand.
Sure. Just that contact, getting back to a sense of normalcy and sitting across from the table and just getting some stuff played and seeing people. We were talking about seeing people you haven't seen in 3 years at this event, because not only had it been a year since the previous Dice Tower Con, then we had to cancel for 2 years. And so it was 3 years between Dice Tower Con and Dice Tower East. And everyone was like, oh, old friends, I haven't seen you in so long. It was quite the reunion special, I think.
Yeah, I don't even know if I could count how old Mike Delisio is now after 3 years.
He gets older and older.
Every year. All right. Quick, before we go into that, I'm just going to do two reviews. I'm actually really excited about these. So I have the two new heroes. I'm showing them to them, but obviously it's a podcast, so I'm just holding them up. But the two new heroes from Marvel Champions have released by the time this podcast comes out. And I'm actually really excited about these two. I will tell you specifically more than a review of how do they play. But Marvel Champions is my favorite game. You'll see me stream it a lot. So first off, we have SPDR Spider. Have either of you seen Into the Spider-Verse?
Oh, yes.
Yeah. Yep.
All right. So you will recognize these characters. SPDR is kind of the anime, the girl with the spider suit.
Mm-hmm.
She's that one. And then Spider-Ham is the wacky cartoon version, the pig version of Spider-Man.
John Mulaney, yes.
Yeah, and John Mulaney played him. So these two released, and why I'm actually excited about these is there's some really unique design here. I mean, that's kind of the hallmark of the Marvel Champions game, is that you have all these characters, but they really do play unique. So SPDR is really interesting. She's a very puzzly character. So if you're into that, like, puzzly mechanism, kind of figure all this out. And interestingly enough, she was designed by MJ Newman. And so MJ Newman, she is one of the people behind Arkham Horror. So she does the Arkham Horror LCG and a lot for that. And so she jumped in to kind of guest design this one. And it's a really unique taste. So most heroes in the game have a 6-hand size in their alter ego and a 5-hand size in their hero form. But SPDR is only 4 and 3. But what she does is she puts a whole bunch of interface upgrades. She's very like computer mechanical. And you can use all of those as various resources to draw more cards and gain more things. So every single piece of her equipment has like multi-uses. So it's like a multi-use card system, which of course, you know, when all those games came about with multi-use cards, Glory to Rome being the one I think of, people got very excited. So it's kind of got that system. And then Spider-Ham, if you have kids or young people in your life that you play games with, Spider-Ham is just full of ridiculous silliness. So all his cards are cartoon cards. He has a card to protect himself called Cartoon Physics, where he is flattened on the card, and he only takes 1 damage from an attack. So as opposed to being hit for 3, 4, 5, 6 damage, he can just flatten himself and only take 1 damage. And then he has all the fun cards that say things like stick out your tongue at the villain attacks you and you draw three cards, or you remove one of his tune counters and you loudly read the flavor text, which is pow, bam, whack, smack, boink, and you get to read all the flavor text and do the effect on the card. So I think it's an absolute blast. I love doing that stuff. I think the silliness is fun, even in a game that isn't intended to be fully silly, but I know a lot of people are excited because their kids are very excited about Spider-Ham. I think he holds a prominent role too in the like cartoon that's on Disney Plus. Does anybody know about this?
I haven't seen it.
Sure.
I haven't either, but there's like a Spidey and Friends, I think it's called. I think that's what it is. And a lot of younger kids, my kids are older now, so they're not watching Spidey and Friends on Disney Plus. But anyway, they all kind of look like the Marvel United heroes. That's what I think of when I think of Spidey and Friends.
Right. Okay.
Yeah. Sure.
So, Eric, I know you've played Marvel Champions. Steph, have you played it before?
Yeah. Yeah. I am okay on it.
All right.
I think it would be better as a two-player game, which I've only played it with four.
Ah, so. Yeah. Learning is definitely better at two.
Yeah, I bet.
Often if there's like three people, I will sit out, run the villain and let people play, you know, with two or whatever. Cause there's a lot of reading cards. And so it can get long.
So yeah. I should try it again.
There you go. Awesome. Are we ready to talk about Dice Tower East?
Let's do it.
All right. So, Steph, you had some adventures beforehand. Why don't you tell us about some of the things you did while you were in Orlando?
So it's funny because I've been going to Dice Tower Con. Okay, it's now East. Okay, I've been going since the third one. I've been to everyone. And so I have become friends with many people of the area. So right now I have the opportunity to go down like the weekend before, stay with friends. We have game days beforehand. So it's like a pre-con almost. I actually ended up getting season passes to Universal Studios. So I spent a few days there. And my friends from Canada drove down. I know it's a long drive. So I was excited to hang out with them. They're Twitch streamers, the DeFoob channel. So they came down. They went with us to Universal a day. So we had like a whole lot of pre-con awesomeness.
That sounds amazing.
I know. I love Universal Studios. Harry Potter World is just amazing.
Oh, yeah. The Hagrid ride is just unbelievably cool. Oh,
it's so good. And the Velocicoaster, I could ride those all day, every day.
Okay.
I love it.
And was it worth it just for this one trip to get a season pass?
So I actually came back last October. So I'm like, if I'm going to be here a full week in October last year, and I know I'm coming back in July, that just pays for itself because you get the 10% off everything and go multiple days. And you get the free parking, which is really a save because that adds up.
I've always dreamed of having a season pass to an amusement park, and it's just never happened.
Really? Someday. Someday. All right.
Nice.
Maybe Six Flags.
Yes.
Well, you're getting me excited because I am taking my daughter and two of her best friends to Universal next summer.
That my God, plan. It's so good. You're going to have a blast. I mean, especially if they love Harry Potter.
I then have to figure it out because we're going to leave like the day before Dice Tower East is starting. And I'm going to have to see if I can play can I stay a few extra days?
Can I stay the extra week?
Can I just stay, please?
Even if I don't make it through the weekend, but I could kind of do like the Tuesday setup, the Wednesday opening day, and come back. Mm-hmm. I may try to do that. And similar to you, we have friends that live in Orlando about 15 minutes from the resort. So it's like, maybe I could just stay with them a couple nights and it would be really cheap.
Okay.
Yes.
So we'll have to see. But I feel like after being at an amusement park for whatever it would be, 5 days or whatever, I might be pretty exhausted anyway.
Especially in July. It was hot. Yeah. It was ridiculous.
Yes.
Nice. So Eric, tell us about some of the events, the things, the coming back after 3 years. What was Dice Tower Con like from your perspective?
Well, I mean, we mentioned the reunion aspect of this. There was a lot of fist bumps and hugging and, oh, I haven't seen you in so long, and just catching up that happened here. This was a slightly less large event than the last Dice Tower Con. It's sort of been a rebuilding process. The Dice Tower group is now running this solo. And so sort of starting smaller than the size that Dice Tower Con was a few years ago. As far as I know, everything ran pretty smoothly. I was not privy to any major kerfuffles going on. We did do a few events, not many, a number of flea market sort of events. And there was a couple of Wits and Wagers games, which is always a blast to get to do with large groups of people. And we make it sort of into a game show and have really, you know, almost every major convention that I'm at, I get to participate in that. And we had another first for me was an engagement in the process of a Wits and Wagers game. We sort of did this preset bit where I pretended I couldn't read the title of this team's name, and I handed it to this guy and said, "Can you read this for me? I can't read the handwriting." And he turns to his girlfriend and proposes.
And, that's awesome.
It was cool. She said yes, which is important.
Yeah, even better.
You tell one of these stories. But that was a blast. That's never happened to me in a Wits and Wagers game before. And just, it had a great time.
Just in other games.
Yes.
Not the Wits and Wagers games.
Yeah, not Wits and Wagers, obviously.
Those Wits and Wagers games are really, really fun. You did one at non-major conventions, too, because you did one at the Portal.
I did do one at the Portal. I recall being shoved in that back room and squeezing as many people in that back room as possible to do a Wits and Wagers game.
We did, and now you think post-COVID, it's like, no thanks.
Yeah, no, I'm good. Let's spread out a little more.
Yeah, but we had the whole Dice Tower team come up to our store. That was really fun.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
I love it. Awesome. Well, who wants to talk about games they played?
Sure.
I do.
I can chime in that I participated in the flea market, which was awesome. Ooh. Because we actually got 3 hours of sale time, which was really great for me.
Cool. Yeah, I see you had your calendar there.
Oh, yeah, I did have my calendar. So it is a little late in the year, but it's I've discounted it to account for the months missed. But you can still enjoy the pretty pictures at any time.
Yes.
You added in Socktober and December.
Yeah. So I appreciate the flea market always. And, you can find some treasures there.
I guess I should mention for people listening, just in case they don't know. So Dice Tower East has been going on for several years. It's in Orlando. And the resort is the Carib Royale. Is that correct?
Yes.
Yeah. So at the Carib Royale right in Orlando, and it takes place kind of the first full week in July is.
It's the 4th of July week. Yeah.
Yeah. That's where it's been for a while.
Yeah. And for as long as I've gone.
It's really playing games. I mean, there's a big room.
Yes.
and the Dice Tower crew lays out all the hot games area when I've come down to help out. That's kind of been my space, is being in that hot games area and just teaching all the games to people, because teaching games is my thing. I love people going, wow, I think I know how to play this game now, and I didn't have to sit there and struggle with it. You know, I feel like that's a huge help. So I love doing that. And then there's a separate room with vendors, which has gotten bigger and bigger over the years, for sure. But it's still, in the grand scheme of things, it's just a place for people to find some more games and connect a little bit more with maybe the publishers that make some of the games they love. Right.
Right. The vendors section, which is just, it was part of the main room
this time.
They had a wall that they could close it off at night. There were only like 3 rows of vendors. It was not a gigantic group this year. I think in previous years, it's been a much larger separate room, larger thing. There were, I don't know, maybe 20 vendors in there. Still a good lively group with demos and stuff going on in the back, but it was not a gigantic group of vendors.
Right.
Nice.
Yeah.
All right. So what games did you get a chance to play, new and old?
I guess the highlight for me was getting Scythe back to the table, because I rarely get to play that, and Nations. I love those games, and so whenever I get the chance to play with people who know either of those or teach them, even, it gives me joy to bring some of my favorites back to the table.
Nice. How many did you play with Scythe with?
We just played with 4.
Okay, it was just 4.
Yeah.
Have you ever played it with, is it 7 that it
7
goes to? Is that the
Yeah. As soon as that first expansion came out, whenever that came out many years ago, we had been playing Scythe every week at that point, and we're just like totally ready for it. And we played that 7-player game in 80 minutes. It was like the fastest game.
Everybody was just ready to play.
We were ready for it. And so I played it with 7, and it's a pretty much incredible either way. I just love the game anyway. So
yeah.
Yeah, I really want to like Scythe a lot more. I struggle with the end of Scythe. It always just catches me off guard, and I love the puzzle, and that Nobody still has repeated that, like, oh, when you complete this, you get to remove a cube, which makes this thing give you a bigger bonus, and this thing cost less,
Yeah, it's
which is
clever.
amazing. That's just so clever. But then the end is just like, get all the points you can at the last minute.
Right, you want to
And
be you, that pivot point is important, and you want to be in control of it and not reacting to
yes.
yeah, that's exactly it. Yeah. And I'm probably always the one reacting to
it.
it, which is my
As long
fault.
as you know.
And Nations is kind of a, that's kind of like a, I don't know, I guess I think of Through the Ages, and then I, you know, in Nations, they kind of go hand in hand with those longer Civ type games of like card. Is Nations a card drafting game?
Yeah, it's ish. I mean, you're still paying, you're paying for cards, but there's a tableau of cards, and
Right,
so it's
right.
you're not, so the different, the major difference between Through the Ages and Nations is that you don't know what the card selection is going to be
Right.
versus Through the Ages, where all of the cards are seen each game. So people who really know the game will do really well because you're already know what's going to come out, versus
For sure.
Nations, where you have to just think and be tactical and just know how to play with these cards. So that's
Nice.
why I like it.
For sure, yeah. We played Through the Ages with Eric Cathy and I
Yes.
on the app, and it was
Oh,
extremely
nice.
close.
It was a great game.
I have
I
no
hear the app
well
is
done app.
fantastic, so.
It is, there's no other game that I play on the app and don't play in person. It's the only
That's
game
fair.
that I play the app and I don't play it in person. It's just that good. And it still feels like the experience of the game.
I've owned both versions of Through the Ages and have never played my physical copies. It's sort of a weird situation, but yeah, app and online, I've played a ton, but haven't played my physical copies of the game.
So, do
Yeah.
you like Nations then?
I like Nations, but I like Nations the dice game a little better.
Okay.
I think it's a little
Oh, yeah.
snappier. Nations can go pretty long. I think because of that tactical, like, what do I have to do? Here are my four choices in each of the tiers. What can I do with this? And so it slows down a little bit, but I haven't played it nearly as much as the dice game. I just like the speediness of the dice game, upgrading your dice and trying to push your strategy in a particular direction. It has a lot of the same pieces of the Big Brother, but it moves a little faster.
Yeah, it makes sense. No, I've always enjoyed my plays of Nations, but I admit I've played Through the Ages so much more, but that's because of the app. Our thing is my wife and I will take the train to New York City, so it'll leave out of like New Haven, Connecticut or somewhere, and we can play one game of that on the train on the way down, you know, back and forth.
Yeah.
It's
Oh,
like
that's
that
nice,
perfect
yeah.
length to just play and kind of pass that, you know, 90-minute to 2-hour train ride. And then we're in
Perfect.
New York City and it's a great day.
Cool.
All right, Eric,
So
what'd you play?
you mentioned the hot games section, which is where certain of the most popular or newest games have been laid out and they just stay there on those tables for the entire convention. And one of those that I didn't even know anything about until seeing it is called Transmissions. It's based on the art of a guy named Matt Dixon, these adorable little robots. And you don't own any of the robots. You're controlling them as they move around this rondel circular track, and you're acquiring resources and then trying to buy items and ideas for your robots and pipes to make little connections. It's adorable. It's very straightforward in its rules, but has sort of this nice satisfying, I'm making this robot cooler as I move it around and I'm moving these adorable pieces around. And so not only did I play it several times, but I'd ended up teaching it to several folks. This was one of those Kickstarters, though, that I think they totally sold out of that initial print run. And so now a bunch of people played it at the convention and are looking for it and won't be able to find it unless
Oh dear.
the publishers are able to be convinced to go for a second print. So hopefully, fingers crossed, they see enough people saying, yes, we want another copy or we want to buy one that they are convinced to go for a second print run. Because at the moment, it's going to be very difficult to find transmissions.
Yeah, sure. I just wanted to point out you mentioned like, you know, you played it, you learned it, then you ended up teaching it. I find that that happens a lot at Dice Tower Con. Like I ended up teaching Scout and then hearing stories later that it's been taught 6 times since I taught them. You know, it's like that that gives me joy to know that you know that that is happening around a convention setting like this. Just to know that people are enjoying games that you're teaching them, and that they go off and spread the love of game.
It is really cool. Many conventions do this at this point. It's pretty
Sure.
standard that you've got the players wanted and the teacher wanted flags that you can put up when you grab a game from the library or pull one out that you've been wanting to try. And so I would often just walk. I would have some game time. I know I have a couple hours that I could play something, and I wouldn't have an agenda. I'd just look around and see what flags were up. And sometimes I'd see people poring over a rule book with the yellow teacher flag up on a game that I knew, and I could sort of hover and say, I can run this through for you if you'd like. And sometimes I would sit with them at the time if they were looking for players too. Like, I'll sit down and play this classic that I haven't played in a while. I actually rescued a few people who were unpacking Merchant of Venus, and I saw them. I said, "Hey, which version are you playing?" They're like, "Ah, oh, we couldn't decide, so we're going to play the Fantasy Flight complicated one." I said, "No. Flip that board over." But I managed to teach it to them and would keep checking back because I happened to be on like hall walking duty at the time. So I could swing in, they'd have a couple of questions, and I'd leave and they'd play for a little bit longer. But it was really satisfying to teach a game to folks and then see them bring it out again or answering those same questions. It's a really nice community building feeling as the folks that know a game will teach it. And get others rolling more quickly than just pouring through the rule book.
Yeah, I remember. I think it must have been the last one that happened, was when Unmatched came out.
Oh, yeah.
And it was like the front table, and I sat down day one, and I taught it to people, and I taught it to Andrew Smith, who was actually my roommate in college, and then he's
Yep.
with the Family Gamers podcast. He was there, and then I taught it to like Brian Drake was there, and James Hudson, I think, and I played it, and then it was like everybody who you were teaching was just teaching somebody else, and the people from Restoration were like, we don't even need to be by this game anymore. Like everybody's just teaching it, which is, yeah, it's just such a cool feeling because not only you're teaching it, but you're bringing that energy, right?
Yeah.
Of like, oh my gosh, like, because I know I felt that sometimes, like working at Gen Con or some of those, and I'm at Capstone, and it's like, boy, I like this game, but once you demo it and teach it, 8, 10, 12 times in a day, you lose a little bit of that steam. But people who are just, they just played it and now they want to teach you, they have so much of
Yeah.
that energy still of like, this was so much fun. It was so neat.
Well, sometimes with those hot games, that is literally what would happen. If somebody would play the game, and then the next group would be hovering and say, "Hey, can we
Right.
sit down now? Would you like me to hang around and teach it to you? Because I just played it. It's all really
Right.
fresh in my mind. I could do it." And that happens a lot with the hot games.
Yeah, for sure.
I remember Tuesday when we were setting up too, like Tom had us going around and setting up all the games, and any game that I hadn't played, I was like sitting and perusing the rule book to have some level of familiarity. I do pretty well with rule books. Like a lot of people learn from videos or from a teach. I'm actually not a good person to teach a game. I'm not the best. I'm not the person who's going to steal the rule book from you and read through the whole thing while you teach me. I don't do that. I definitely try to learn, but it's a little tricky for me at times. I do really well with rule books. In fact, I will like get the PDF of a game and just read the rules, somewhere on my computer or something throughout the day to play the game that evening is kind of my standard. So, but then it's fun to be ready and be like, okay, I haven't played this, but I have a really good, I can get you
Right.
started, right? I can get
Yeah.
you set up, I can get you on the, and then you'll have to look up those little rules. But even that is really helpful at these
Yeah.
conventions and things. More games! Tell me about more games.
Well, I did get a few Canizias to the table, which always great to
Awesome.
play Medici again and again. I just love Medici, and we played Amon Re, which is actually on Gamefront right now. So, getting that back to the table, I appreciate Reiner Canizia's games. So, playing a few favorites. The only game I learned that was really big was On Mars. So, which was good. I liked it.
I still haven't played that one.
It was probably my favorite Lacerda. I can't say I'm the biggest Lacerda fan just because there's always way too much, in my opinion, going on. But On Mars had a lot of more Euro-y mechanics that I do appreciate. So I liked it. I would play it again.
Do you know which Lacerdas you've played?
Oh yeah, I think I've played them all.
Okay, perfect.
I there might be one or two I'm missing, but I know I've played most of them.
I don't mean this like as a challenge. Have you played Weather Machine?
Oh no, that one I've just seen around. I'm just like, I'll just wait till everybody knows it way better than me and then could teach me. That's what happened here with On Mars. Like I found somebody who really knew the rules that could really just hone in and teach, which I prefer. So
Yeah, no, the only reason I asked you, Steph, is because you tend to be like, I see you on Facebook and you're tracking the new games you've played this year. So I know you're somebody that has access to a lot of those games. You're look
yep.
that was my main reason more than like, have you played them all?
No, of course I have not played them all. That's why my unplayed collection is like 700 games. It's ridiculous.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah,
That's a
no, it's a lot, but that's I like learning everything just because I
for
don't
sure.
know what I'll love most if I haven't played them all.
Yeah. No, it makes sense. Nice. Well, I like Lisboa. That's hands down my favorite Lacerda. And I like Kanban's like a love hate. It's like one game is so good, and then the other game you're just like tearing your hair out, and then the next game you're like, oh no, this is good again. So it's like
Yeah, I get that totally.
a little bit of that. Nice. What else did you play, Eric? Anything?
So, I mean, we talked about the brand new games, the hot games. We talked about playing your old favorites. There's also that middle ground of things that are new to you but aren't necessarily at the forefront anymore. They're maybe 6 months to a year old that you've missed, for whatever reason. And the library at Dice Tower East is so cool. Just to wander around and say, oh, I remember people talking about this a year ago. I haven't had a chance to play this. You can pull it off the shelf and check it out and maybe even find a teacher that is going to teach it to you. And that was the case with me in the Power Rangers deck building game, which I missed on its initial hit. That Renegade came out with like three of them almost simultaneously. You had the Transformers and the G.I. Joe, both of which I played and enjoyed. Very different games, but I didn't have any experience with the Power Rangers one because Power Rangers, that wasn't really a property that I was that interested in. But I had the opportunity to sit down and play it. And this is different from the other two as well. It's a versus game, so it's a team deck builder where you've got the bad guys and the good guys, and you can play either like a 2-on-2 or a 1-on-1 or even a 2-on-1. There's rules for making all that happen. And the good guys are charging up their Megazords and charging up their characters. It's not just most deck builders are what do you have in your hand? What can you do? What can you buy? And then you pretty much have to utilize everything in one go and then hope for your next hand to be useful as well. But this one allows you to actually dock cards onto your character, which then opens up abilities that you can trigger and spend energy to do so. And if you're playing with a partner, you have like a shared pool of energy. So it's not just the tactical, what do I have in my hand now? It's what have I attached to my character? What has my opponent attached to their character? What are they going to be able to do? Can I charge up my Megazords and form Voltron? It's not Voltron, the Megazord. And actually take out the bad guy. It just seemed to have a real strong progression to it. I liked it a lot. And now I have to maybe track down a third Renegade deck builder.
I know a place that has it,
That's
Eric.
good. Of the
Nice.
deck builders, I've only played the Transformers one, and that was very different. It was a different type of deck building game, which was interesting.
It is, and it has that one has like a tactical map sort of feel
Yeah,
to it.
it was definitely different.
I'm waiting patiently for the expansion to release that allows you to play as the Decepticons because it sort of feels like half of a game right now. And even some of the cards in the Transformers game have iconography that makes you think you can capture them and use them, much like the Power Rangers game, because there were cards that were both bad guys and good guys. And if you are a good guy, you can draft those into your deck. But if you're a bad guy, you have to fight those cards. And it's sort of the same way in the Transformers game, but they didn't release the bad guys yet. So if you're only playing with good guys, you can't draft Megatron into your deck. You have to wait until the Megatron expansion comes out, and then you can get those cards.
Yeah, I'm going to wait for that expansion to come out and then I'm going to have you teach it to me, Eric,
Yes,
because
sir.
I had it and I tried to learn it solo. I'm not the world's best solo game. I don't actually mind playing games solo. I don't have a problem with the idea of like games being solo. I'm very outward. I want to play with people.
True, true.
And so as much as I can understand the game, I don't think my heart was in learning it. So I'm gonna have you teach that one to me, and I look forward to that. I really enjoyed the G.I. Joe one. I actually played it completely wrong, and then I streamed it completely wrong, and people corrected me. I didn't realize you can both play your cards and use them to purchase with. I thought it was one or the other, and that made all the difference in the world, and the game is much more approachable.
Yeah.
It wasn't that just one is very head.
That one's very different from most deck builders, even though it is that tactical, what can I do with what's in my hand? You're utilizing the cards in ways that are unfamiliar because you have to sort of put people on missions and load them in vehicles, and there's a lot more to that than just draft cards and play them.
And I'm excited Renegade is releasing the My Little Pony deck builder. And I'm not particularly interested in My Little Pony, but that really, like, the other ones all feel like nostalgic properties for us, right?
Right.
But My Little Pony, like, my daughter watched the newer version of the show that they're basing it off. So I feel like there's an opportunity to bring in some young gamers. Now, again, I'm probably wrong because any kids right now that are maybe in the 4 to 6 year old range, that show's over as far as I know.
Mm-hmm.
Right. But at least it gives that nostalgia for a younger audience, right? That they can go back to that. So I'm hoping that that's something really fun that kids coming into the store or game groups or just families can buy and really enter in based off of that one. So
sure, sure.
And it'll be unique. You know, I think it's an interesting theme for them to go with.
Why not? I just wanted to comment that you mentioned the library, which I spoke to Tom about this. He totally rearranged his library to not be alphabetical.
Oh, yeah.
I'm sure he got a lot of comments, but I'm like, why? Why did you do it? He's like, it's easier to arrange things according to type of game. So if you play this, then you can go and enjoy this one that's next to it on the shelf. I mean, I can understand where he's coming from, but as somebody who's like, I want to play Medici, I don't want to have to not go to the M section.
Yeah.
So right. It's definitely a browser's luxury, I guess you could say, because it's really good for browse. His library is really good for browsing.
It's also maximizing space, because if you'll notice, like, shelves 1 through 7 or something are all the Ticket to Ride sized box. They all just jammed in as many of that size box as they could, and then arranged by type and other mechanisms and stuff. I know that if you do alphabetize, which I think the BGG library is arranged that way, you end up with a huge variety of sizes and shapes of
all
boxes.
Over the place.
And it ends up looking a lot more cluttered. So it's really an aesthetic difference. What you have to do is get used to using a card catalog or looking it up online and saying that Medici is on shelf 14 and just look it there.
And I could appreciate that. So the BGG library is like, I don't know what, 8,000 games or something. So it is a lot. I understand his collection looked really nice. It was all very nicely laid out. So I can appreciate that for sure.
There's also a lot of turnover in that library. He's constantly removing stuff. Now, I think they've reached the point at which it all fits in one truck. And if they made it any bigger, it would require another truck. And no
or
one wants
car.
To commit to that. Or, but you can't really put these, they're on rolling carts. And so you can't really put that in a car.
I just want to do the spoof from the, what is it, UHF in the library, and I want to be like, don't you know the Vassal decimal system? Nice. So actually, that kind of brings me to my last question, which I want to know, is there a game you played that was like all blinged out from the library? You were like, wow, like the dice, this is something because they put all this, you know, obviously people have their individual games. I have a friend who like his copy of Concordia is just amazing with a wooden box to hold all these like ceramic tokens. But was there anything you played or maybe an event, like I think of like Giant King of Tokyo or something in one of the rooms from the publishers that was very unique or that you saw? Maybe you didn't play one, but you saw it.
There are a bunch in the library that I can think of, like the big Small World game, which is gorgeous.
Is that the
you know,
version?
Wonderland's War was all painted. Ooh. That was in the Hot Games. Painted, I didn't get to play it. I was like, oh, and even the Ark Nova, they had these little miniature toys for animals. I'm like, oh my God, I want to play Ark Nova with these little miniature animals. There are metal coins that were in Feast for Odin. Then I'm like, oh my God, I need to go buy these coins. Like, I was like, so there's a lot. So I love that they have all these like painted sets, and you know, there's so much to enjoy from the different games inside the collection. So I can't think of like anything specifically that was like a wow factor, because I always, every time I see like a painted or a painted miniature or an insert or special coins, I'm like, this is great. I love having that extra tactile feeling for games. So, you know, whatever he does to boost those games is a plus for me.
The danger, though, is that you find a game in the library that you like, and then you go out and get it and realize that there's like half the components have been upgraded, and now you have to hunt down those upgraded components. I played Gutenberg, which is a game about printmaking,
Yes.
and one of the mechanisms is that you draft ink in different colors, and they're just normally little tokens in the game, but Tom had upgraded these to some sort of Etsy that he went to an Etsy shop that made glass liquid filled vials.
What? That's
And so you're drafting,
amazing.
pulling these from a bag, and they were a little slippery and sort of weird to try and stack in the proper arrangement, but it was really cool to have a little blue liquid vial sitting in front of you to be the blue ink and not just a cube or a
Oh
little
yeah, it's
token.
normally just a cube. So yeah,
That's
that
it's an
sounds
upgrade.
amazing. That definitely.
The most impressive thing I saw was Seven Wonders Architects
Oh
has
yes,
a
Stefan
demo
had
version that
it.
they just brought out, and there it's going to make the convention circuit. It'll be at Gen Con and some other big conventions. But in Seven Wonders Architects, you're building these wonders, and they in the base game they're cardboard components that sort of sit on top of each other flat on the table. But this Uber Deluxe version has you physically building them with building blocks. And so by the time you're done, you've got like a foot tall colossus in front of you that you've assembled on the table. And the cards were gigantic. They're like as big as your head. It looked like Card Sharks, the old game show. That's how big the cards were. It was impressive. I didn't get a chance to play that one, but I certainly drooled over it a little.
Yeah, Stefan had it. I didn't play it either, but yeah, I definitely want to check that.
I was going to say at the end of that, every round of Gutenberg, it must have got pretty loud in there with everybody running their 15th century printing presses
Oh
with
yes.
that
Well, he had
upgrade.
those in the
Like,
box too.
everybody starts running those.
Full authenticity.
Awesome. Well, it sounds like a blast. I was sad I would miss it, but I appreciate both of you coming on here so I could relive your experiences, and I hope to definitely make it back as well, because it's always fun and it's good to hear about the games and everything. So thank you so much to both of you for joining us.
Thank you.
Eric, I apologize. I introduced you, but I didn't say where people can find you or maybe a podcast that you happen to be on or anything. So why don't you let people know where they can find you?
Sure. I'm hiding in many corners of the internet. My current projects for the Dice Tower are I'm on a show called At the Table with Tom and Eric. It's a bi-weekly chat show that airs on YouTube. We're chatting with folks in the board game industry, learning more about them and their backgrounds. And that's also released as an audio podcast shortly after the live show airs. And I'm doing a review series, a video review series called Summerer Time, which is a trio of short reviews that come out all at once. And I'm only two episodes in, but I'm working hard on that episode three. And that's on the Dice Tower channel as well.
Nice.
Cool.
Steph, why don't you go ahead and repeat your places? I think I got them all correct, but I'll
Yay.
let you do it.
I do a blog, a photo blog, All the Meeples of the Rainbow on BGG. But I also stream on Twitch, and you can find me on anywhere with Board Gamer Steph handle. So YouTube and whatever.
And will there be a
Instagram.
2023 calendar?
Oh yeah, I'm working on that. I have to get it together, but I'm not going to do a Kickstarter this year. I'm just going to sell it from my website. So,
Oh, perfect. Nice. So
okay.
definitely check those out because they're amazing pictures.
Thank you.
Steph does a great job with that. So check those out. All right. Thanks to both of you. Thanks to everybody for listening. My name is The Brant, and until next time, I hope you step into the portal. Bye, everybody.
Bye.
So long.